Kommen wir von unseren 5 Minuten, das ist ein Good Perfect Account. Ready to find telegraphs and it's number 50.
Sorry, Peterson. I don't know where she is now. She was only a young teenager, I think. Somebody tried to take a picture of Ruby. Going into Ruby. Nope. Nope. This isn't too good a picture. There's Everett Keel, Leo Keel, and myself. Now you were talking about the Teddy H.
Yeah,
there you are.
Teddy. That's a great picture too. That's 51. The Teddy H in the Yukon River.
No, it's
no.
Where is it? Let's see. That's on Tana River.
Oh.
It's on the Tana River, going upstream. Nobody. That's on Ten River going downstream, huh? Yeah, she was going downstream. Because we were going upstream. Number 620 on time.
Yep. I got a schedule to keep, and there she is.
Well, now here is a dog team. I don't know how I missed the sled so much. But that's, I took that, I was up just above Ruby by 7 miles, and I got off the line and took a picture. Carl Ben Eielson and Miss Crossan, they both died in airplane crashes. Outside of her, she jumped out of her plane, her parachute didn't open, she was in that race between, where was it, where's the race from? San Francisco or somewhere down in there and over to, or going from Washington over. She had motor trouble, so she parachuted out and her parachute never opened.
What's your name?
Miss Crossan.
And Ben Eielson.
Carl Ben Eielson.
Oh, Ben Eielson.
Number 52.
I don't know where this was taken. I think that's on somewhere. Could I don't know.
Did you take this that picture of
this one?
Ben Eielson?
Me, yeah. I didn't take this one though, but I was in trouble that day.
Number 53 of
I was in trouble that day.
Boy, it looks like they got you surrounded.
They sure did. That's the guardhouse in Tannadol.
There's you standing there, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Number 54.
I don't know any of those people, any of those GIs or soldiers at that time.
Mm-hmm. Right in front of the guardhouse.
Do you remember taking that picture, having that picture taken?
Yeah, I remember. They told me to get in the picture. Mm-hmm. I was down there, so I got in the picture.
You were just wandering through?
Yeah, I was down there. I was always around, you know. I was taking a 170.
How old do you think you were?
I was about, I'd say 12 years old, something like that. This is Henry Robeson. I can't tell who the rest of them. That's carrying mail, Henry Robeson. I don't know that man's name. What was his name, Mom? The fellow who had that side wheel, paddle wheel boat that he worked by hand. He was downriver. That's the last picture you can see, Nova. All of them.
This one, okay. 55 is 4th of July in Tower House. That must be Tanana.
Tanana.
Yep, looks like tug of war. And 56.
Mm-hmm. That's Johnny Folger and Edgar Joseph on Tanana River. Uh-huh. The guy, Edgar Joseph, the guy's making a funny face at me.
And this one?
That one there? That's Sandy. That's that mail tree. That's when they were hauling a seven, or putting a ton of mail went across the portage. From Tanana. I don't know, there's about seven or eight teams.
And each team would have about a dozen dogs?
Yeah, some around them.
This is hauling freight up the bank to Caltag.
Caltag, yes. Yeah.
And that would be, when would that be, do you think?
Oh my gosh, that's before I ever moved here. Let's see, when would that be? Say about 25, I guess. And I don't know when that was taken. That's Alec Bilan or Alec Kazemnikov on NCENSEE.
And he was related to you?
He's my father-in-law, my wife's husband. Their father. Cut that part off.
Well, great.
I could put us up, put five of us up on the board, you know, and give us mixed fraction sand, how to add up. And then the teacher would give us the mixed fractions, and then we turn it back to the board right away. And when she said go, I had the common denominator already.
Huh.
Just like that. I had the common denominator already, period. And while they were, when the rest of them, just getting the Rose, when she was getting her common denominator down, I was all through adding. I was all turned around, had my back to the board already. So well, that could be. I really had my mind worked up so as I could remember, bring things out.
Shift into high gear right there.
Oh, that's when you're in school. Yeah, I was for a while that I could just read a whole paragraph in a book, and I could practically do it right back out word for word. Then just about. Yeah. Well, the teacher said in school. Teacher told us in school that Rose and I had wonderful minds and memories, because we could read a poem and recite it almost right away.
Yeah. Yeah. Pretty valuable thing to be able to do.
Yeah.
Yeah, got a good sharp memory.
Yeah. Well, it's just lately now I begin to falter on my own memory now, since I had this little stroke. That's why I quit writing a book on one. I taped quite a bit. I was thinking about I should be taping tonight, but I didn't.
Well,
I got a 7-inch reel, and I can put it on 1 3/4 or 1 7/8 speed.
Well, if you'd like copies of these tapes, you can.
Yeah, I can.
We can make them easier.
Yeah. I know. I see how it's done too. I've heard how it was done, because I made a copy of a tape here a year ago in Stebbins. I went over for a church for the Catholic Church there on their deacon program. And I went over there to get the first hand of it to bring it back to the people here to show them what they were doing and working on, you know. So I took pictures. I took movies, and I copied everything down on tape also. And then when I went to replay it back, my tape recorder got hungry.
Oh, and ate it.
And I had an awful time getting it back, and I finally unscrambled it. And I got it put together again, and I started to go through, and it went again. So I just left it go, and I took it apart and left it go. And I gave it to Father Astruc. And asked him if he could do anything with it. And he took it apart, fixed it, and he made three copies of it. He sent them up to me, and I gave one copy. I forget who I gave it to.
Now, what trip was this that you were just having? Deacon program?
Yeah, a deacon program. To get the first hand idea to pass on to the people here about the deacon program.
Oh, they were having some kind of conference?
They were having it over there. They were, in fact, they were coronating some deacons. Or how is it? They had two men who was becoming deacons, and they were, what would you say? How would you say? They went through the ritual of coronation, I guess, of deacons. And I took pictures of it, and I also taped.
When was that?
2 years ago now, a year and a half ago.
Yeah. How is it they chose you to do the program?
Well, the people here chose me. So I went. And I went over and I took my recorders and I took my movie camera and I took pictures. The pictures come out real good. Yeah.
How long were you over there, Stephanus?
2 nights. Yeah. 1 or 2 nights. One night.
So they just got right into it.
Yeah. I took one over that day and that afternoon, that evening. I went through the coronation that night. I left my camera home. I left my tape recorder home. And I went to where I was staying. And I went out to the dance hall. And everything was going on down there. And I was wishing I had everything then with me, too. Like a moving record, too. I didn't have anything. Although one of the fathers wanted to go back and get it, and I said, oh, it's too far, and I'm sorry, I should have let him go too, Father Peterson. That's like when I go down to Nome, go over to Nome, that's where I stay in Catholic Church. It's my home over there, too. Place to stay as soon as I go to Nome. I don't have to worry about anything. Go over to the Catholic Church and give me a place to stay right away. Eat and sleep. Come and go when I please. No questions asked. The only thing they asked me is, be careful of smoking. This is Father, I don't smoke. He didn't know. This is Father, I don't smoke. Don't worry. I don't drink. Don't worry about that. It's a promise I made. 60. Yeah, I don't know. Years ago, huh? Promised my mother I'd never drink. She asked me that when she was dying. I'm sorry, I'd never drink. I don't care for it, and I don't pay no attention to it. Oh, I have a bottle of beer once in a while. Like sometimes I'll go to a banquet, I'll take a glass of wine, but that's as far as I'll go. Hard liquor, no. I don't miss it, and I don't care for it.
You want to rest, don't you?
You like taking a break?
Where's the other half?
September 21st, 1979, talking to Edgar Cowens in his home at Caltech.
You mentioned we didn't talk about dogs very much yet.
Oh.
And I heard about a dog named Rover.
Oh.
wondering who Rover was.
He was my leader only. That's right. He was just my leader only. Nobody else could drive him, only me. Well, Anna could drive him, but she could drive him just in town when she was about, oh, I'd say 8, 9 years old, 10 years old, maybe. She could drive him anywhere in town. As soon as he went down the beach, went down the bank up here at this slip, he'd turn around and come back. He wouldn't go into the willows back here. He'd turn back. He'd go out the trail here, and right when he hit the willows, which happened to be at that time right about here, in front of my warehouse, that was it. He'd turn back. He wouldn't take her out of the village. Period. But I could drive him anyway. Nobody else could drive him out. He was a one-man dog. One-man leader.
When did he have Rover?
Oh, gee, I don't know. Somewhere in the 50s. He was one of my 6 leaders out of the 7 dog team. He was the last leader I ever put in the lead. The last dog I ever put in the lead for the simple reasons I was out hunting, out in the creek, hunting willow grass. And he just walked right along, even close to the water, open, little open water, he'd walk right by it. He wouldn't shy away at all. So I thought, yeah, I'll see how he is as a leader. I tried him. He was my leader from then on. I never had no other leader that I wanted in the lead. I walk away from the stud, it was it. Nobody could move him. The only way to move him is go and lead him, I guess. Otherwise he wouldn't go. When he didn't move to go, the other dogs wouldn't go. I could walk away from the sleigh, and when I come back 2 hours later, he was still there. The whole team was still there. All glad to see me.
Was that when you were running mail?
No, I didn't have. I don't think I know. I didn't have. I was trapping.
Trapping?
Yeah, I was trapping. Yeah.
Where'd you trap?
I trapped out between here and Old Woman, about 40 miles from here. I didn't trap that full distance because there's people trapping out here out to 20 miles about, and I trapped from 20 miles on out to Old Woman. I had about 10 miles, I mean, there's 2 of us, Elia Stanley and I. Mm-hmm. Elia Stanley, Missouri Stanley's older brother.
Was your family here in town when you were
Yeah. Oh, yes. Hannah had to go to school. She was going to school all the days.
So how long did you go out for?
It's all according. 3, 4, 5 days. Sometimes I was out a week. Once I was out for another 2 weeks. But I had plenty of wood home. I didn't care.
What were you trapping for?
Oh, mink mostly. No marten then, hardly. There was maybe one marten in 10 miles. But there was a few more mink tracks, mink around.
There are a lot of marten now.
Last winter we had marten coming out of our ears, as the saying goes. Everybody was complaining, have you got any mice traps? Any mice traps? I said, yes, I got one. The best mouse trap in the world. The marten. He's in our back shed.
You've got a marten in your back shed?
I didn't catch him. He eat up all our nice dry eating fish. 2 of them. I didn't catch him. I didn't even try. I had traps. It was just before the snow fell. And after the snow fell, I went to church. And when I come back that morning, coming back from church, I see a Martin run towards the house. That is the tracks going towards the house. It's the last tracks I ever saw. Never saw the Martin afterwards. Because we got pictures of them. My wife got pictures. I had my cameras all set up and everything all ready. And she turns around and she says, "I'll show you how." Bang, bang, and she got the Martin. I said, "Hey, Mom, here's the Martin." "Where?" And she just come and he just jumped down behind some boxes. "Hey, I want to take your picture." And what does he do? The little devil come back up and sit down and looked at her and she took a picture of me. Yeah, I couldn't believe it. And what the heck is going on here? Here I've been trying to get pictures of him for ages and I haven't even got anything.
So what happened to Martin?
Well, I guess somebody got it. There was Martin all over. There was Martin. I don't know how many Martin was caused around here. I never bought a skin. But there was Martin galore. Well, my grandson, Walker, went out. And him and George Tom and them went out. Walker and Kenneth, they went out and they said, I forget how many traps going out. And when they come back that afternoon, they pick up six Martin. Just like that. Give you an idea. Well, one man here picked up six Martin on his trap line one morning just going out. Just like that. There was Martin all over. There was just everywhere.
Do you have any idea why so many Martin?
Well, I don't know. We didn't have any. Well, we had a lot of lemming around here too. For the last 4 years, I guess, we had lemmings around here. So that may have drawn these Martin. They just have to have lemmings was here, and they just happened to come here, come right after them. One of the Martin probably said, "Hey, there's some lots of feed down here. I'll just go back over there." That's what it is. Pardon me.
Well, how did you do trapping mink when you used to?
Oh, there was hardly anything out there. I was lucky to get five or six mink before Christmas down in there. And that's about all. But beaver is, after our daughter got married, George, then we tried beaver out there. We did well on beaver.
We had. Were you trapped with George?
Yeah, we trapped mm-hmm. together.
Not
yours. Yeah, huh? He's. I took him out. We went out, and then we didn't divide any of the skins up. We just trapped for ourselves. Each one of us trapped for each one, each his own, you might say. But we did real well. We got around 37 Martin. After the first year, we got 42 or 40, just 40. And after that, we got average around 37, 35. And we didn't try to kill our country. We caught Martin on there right up until about 3 years ago, 4 or 5 years ago, I guess. And then he went to Nenana's to try it up there. And then he come back the next year. In the meantime, there's a couple of men went out there and they just cleaned it out. So it's beginning to build up again now, since we're back here. They got everything, right? Young babies and all, And George and I, we just took 2, 3, 4 beaver maybe out of a den and that was it. Try to kill them.
Well, how were prices for beaver, mink, and Martin back then when you were trapping?
Well, Martin wasn't too much, about $8-$9. Beaver was running about $30. Beaver blankets.
Did he have group buyers coming in here?
Well, we sold most of ours to Dominic's. Dominic was, we'd go up to kayak, spend 3-4 days up there with him, have a good time. And Dominic bought all our fur, you might say.
Well, did you enjoy traveling?
Oh, yes. I enjoy trapping beaver more than anything else.
What did you enjoy about it?
It's hard work and all that, but it's, I like it. I like it more. It's, you only got one place of water to set your traps, and that's it. You're right there. We used to put up our tent out there and stay there. Every morning we hook up and go and clean our trap out and check it over, you know, trap plan. And we'd be right back again. So, we both enjoyed it.
Well, what things do you like about trapping? What makes trapping enjoyable?
Well, you're outdoors and having a good time. You're out and you're free and that's it. You're your own boss, period. And if you're doing anything, if you want, you got to, you know, more so than in town here. You really got nothing to do, but out there you have something to do every day. It's lots of fun. We had our radio with us, listening to news nighttime. Yeah, we enjoyed it. At least I did. I know George did too.
Well, when did you start trapping?
George?
When you?
I started trapping, oh, I don't know. I trapped up in Stephen Village, too. About 1923, but I didn't trap too much. I trapped a little around town. But I really started trapping beaver down here, because I learned to trap from here myself.
You taught you how to trap?
Oh, I got a little information from this one, little information from that one, and I finally put them all together, and I began to pick out a way that I could catch the beaver. So and after George got married to our daughter, well, then I took him under my wing and I showed him how to set traps, and I made sure that the trap was set, period. I made sure that that trap was set okay. And when he got through that first year, we both had 40 beaver each and had two limits, which wasn't, we hadn't broken any rules because I had 20 for myself and 20 for my wife. Because we both took our wives out, spent evening, we took them out 2 or 3 times. Spend the night out there, you know, day. And it was good for them. We all enjoyed it. We had a tent there and he real fixed up real nice. Nice and warm. We had, we built 3 logs high and put our tent on it. Nice and warm. Had a little heater stove to all burn all night, you know. It was fine.
So when was the last time you were trapped?
58, I quit. Mm-hmm. Oh no. Yeah, I think it was about 58.
Why'd you decide to quit?
Well, I had a bum knee and I couldn't walk on very good. So I just quit. I didn't want to throw all the work on my partner in trapping. I forgot.
Well, what do you think about
I want to work 50-50 in the work when I'm out trapping. I don't want to throw everything on the other fella. So I just quit.
Did you quit having dogs when you quit trapping?
I got my first snowbowl, I guess, in 61, and yes, 58, I think it was. I had surgery on my knee. And that was it, on dogs.
Well, what happened to your knee?
Well, I had what you call a football knee, I guess. Because I had a broken bone cartilage in it. They took a piece out, and I was getting along fine, and then I bumped it again, and I know it broke another little chunk. It bothered me awful afterwards. So I didn't go out anymore. And up until about a year and a half ago, I went in. Well, they drew some fluid off of it. Then they were going to cut out the joint and put in a new one, artificial plastic. And they sent me home and a pair of crutches and a cane. It didn't last till about 3 weeks, I guess. I started to leave the crutches behind. So when I went back, following fall, doctor comes to the conclusion that my knee was all right, my age, so he just let me go. I told him I thought I had the same idea, doctor.
Well, did you use your legs a lot before you were trapping?
Well, you had to. You had to. Because you had to sometimes. Sometimes you have to put on snowshoes and walk ahead of the dogs. And that's a lot of work.
Remember any times you really had to do that a lot, a long time?
Oh, yes. We left here one night, three of us left here, three dog teams. Left here one night, one afternoon, one evening. Afternoon. Heading for 22 Mile Cabin, out in 22 Mile and Portage. And we got out here 20 miles out here. 22 miles, and I left my bedding, my blankets, and my sleeping bag and fish because I was going back to Eno Creek and the Nikolai, and probably Mexican and myself. And Mexican and Andy, they had their everything with them because they weren't going out anymore. But I was going back to him to sleep, and I left my stuff. So anyhow, we got 20 miles out here. We had tea, and it started to snow. And it snowed, and we started in to go. So we put Mexican on, give him the three dogs, three teams. I give him three teams, and then I was walking ahead, and he was walking behind me. And I had a gasoline lantern so as I could follow the trail because it was pretty well covered. And we made tea. About midnight, we weren't here yet. We was out here about 6 miles. We made tea. Then we come on. We got home here at 2:30 in the morning. Yes, you have to get on snowshoes. It means lots of work. And the dogs, too. They were tired.
Well, what were you doing?
I was just going back over pick up some, I don't know, just going back. Oh, I was going to get something. I forget now what it was. Well, I know one thing. I was going to get some onions and probably a few other things that I picked up in the store. Bring it back.
You used to go over there shopping
quite a bit? Well, I'd go over there, and I had friends over there, too. I used to stay over there. I still got friends over there. I got a place that I can go over there right now. I don't have to worry about where I'm going to stay. Just go right there, and that's it. Pete Katoomin is my house home over there. Yeah. Looks like he ran short. Oh.
Did you train your dogs different for trapping than you did for running mail?
No. They were just, I treat them all the same. You know, just like I said, I had dog teams that wouldn't run away from me. So I played with them all the time. That's one reason. I turn loose and I play with them. And I go away and come back, you know, and they're waiting for me. And I come back, I pet them all right away. I wouldn't just pet one and go on. I pet the whole bunch. In fact, they were all right around me all the time anyhow when I went up there. Amongst them. I had no necklines on my dogs, which was give them more freedom. They could lay down any way they want to lay down when I walked away from them. There was no straight knot laying down this way. They'd curl up any way they wanted. And I had dogs. No, they didn't fight.
And did you look for certain special kind of dogs?
No. I raised those dogs that I was trapping with. We raised them ourselves here. Just like this little one dog we got around here, we got him, he's around the house all the time. And it's all according to the way you treat dogs. You treat them good and they right back to you like that. Well, you take a horse or an animal too, you know, you treat a horse real nice, and the horse is right there all the time, if you've ever been around them.
Well, did you fish for your dogs?
No, I didn't. I was too busy working on the boat. Oh, so, I was working down the river.
So where did you feed them?
I'd fish. George was trapping, or fishing. See, the first year we trapped together. We were catching beaver and we had to buy fish. So we had to trade beaver for fish, beaver skins for fish. So right then and there, I told him, I said, George, I'll make a deal. You fish for your dogs, for our teams. I'll make sure we get flour, sugar, and milk. And that's it. That's the way it's been ever since. Right up to the whole time. Made sure.
So is that pretty much what the dogs would eat? Would be fish?
Mm-hmm. That's right. When we got beaver meat too, well then we'll feed them beaver meat with fish. Believe me, that beaver meat make them feel good too.
That's what I do.
You bet. And you can call dogs dumb if you want to, but you give them, we give them a fish and a half while we were trapping. And they'd eat it. And then if we was going to feed them beaver meat, we'd give them only one fish. You know, them rascals wouldn't eat that fish. No? They wouldn't eat it. They'd sit there and wait. So George and I, we went in and Ted let them wait. They still waited. So we went back out and fed them beaver meat. They eat that first.
Now when you only
get
one.
Yeah, it seemed like way. I just couldn't believe it, but they were there. And they were all right.
tell me something about the Iditarod and, you know, how you, you know, how that got started and how it was that you were one of the people running CERN?
Well, the Iditarod, I'm never in the Iditarod. I never was. It's, that was started, well, the father of it started, Mr. Reddington, Sr. He's the one who started it. Nobody said it would take, but it sure taken. And we see all the racers going through. Some of them stop here. They stop all over. And everywhere in town here.
You get quite a few visitors in that country?
Well, not too many. There's only about, well, last one, I think we had four or five of them stopped with us because they're all over town anyhow. Some of them didn't even stop in town. They just took off and kept going. Passed right on through.
Well, you mentioned something about ABC coming through. Why were they interviewing you?
Well, on account of the CERN run. Mm-hmm. They interviewed me in Anchorage, too. And then when they come through here, well, I knew they were coming here. So they interviewed and took movies, too.
Mm-hmm.
Why did
they
want to
know about the CERN
run? Well, it's really... I guess nobody really knew anything about it. There was only two people got notoriety out of it during the original run, right in the beginning. That was Leonard Sepla and Ferdinand Gunnar Kasten. They're the only two who got any notoriety. The rest of us didn't know anything about.
Why did those two guys get
on? I don't know, because they were the last two teams on the run. The first team didn't make it. And all the rest of the 16 teams didn't make it, only just the last two. They're the ones who got into Nome, but nobody was mentioned in between.
Pardon me.
18. It is in the congressional record. Mr. Bartlett put it in there. You know, Bob Bartlett got it in the congressional record, and it's in... Oh, I can't remember now, but I know it's in there. I got a copy of it somewhere.
Maybe.
Only one man's name was omitted, but not really omitted in that one respect. They didn't know who it was. And they said that there was one team that was positive that didn't know who it was, the team that I took the serum from. Or I gave the serum to, and that was Dan Green. I gave it to him in Hot Springs. I had everybody else down but Dan Green.
Well, could you, let's say there's a young kid who doesn't know anything about the serum and the stools. Maybe you could tell him what it was about, why they did it, and how they organized everybody.
Well, it was a diphtheria epidemic. And there is a book written on it, maybe two, I don't know, but one book. But it was most of it was written on the second run, not the first run. And it was written by Ungerman. And there was no way to get down to Nome outside of my dog team because it was too cold, 1560 below. And the airplanes couldn't fly, and they were all open cockpit planes. So they couldn't make it. And so they organized the dog teams, the H.K. Mulford Company. Made the serum, and the Governor Bone, he got things rolling up here in Alaska, and The NC Company was practically one of the biggest instigators of the bunch in the outfit, because they had mail team, mail contracts, you know, and they all the way from Nenaniston to Ruby. They had dog teams between Tano and Ruby. So they started in and got the NC to get started on it. I happened to be working for the NC as an extra driver. I'd been hauling the auditor around from Tanana to Hot Springs up to Nenana, all the way over the circle, Fort Yukon, back down, over to Ruby, down to Ruby. And I was just laying around. This term run come up, I didn't know anything about it. Well, I was... Right there.